February 17, 2008, Auckland, New Zealand.
Sankirtan newsletter, which along with the official BBT monthly newsletter sent out by Rameshwar Swami, keeps the temples around the world and Srila Prabhupada up to date with temple book distribution scores. Whereas the BBT newsletter bases the temple rankings in the monthly competition on the amount of Lakshmi they send into the BBT each month, Sri Tadeva's Sankirtan newsletter lists individual book distributor scores, as well as all the books sold by category, small, medium, large, and maha large, in each temple per week. Since he started it in 1974, his newsletter has helped fuel the competitive book distribution spirit amongst the temples and devotees, and is read and appreciated by Srila Prabhupada. Now with his move to England, he has stopped the service and handed it on to another devotee in Los Angeles. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, Text 33. Evam adhyana yadhudano mrityur gaja bhayat tamasi gri kandara praye. Mrityu means what? Mrityu? Death. Gaja? What's a gaja? Mrityu gaja bhayat, out of fear of the elephant of death. Tamasi, darkness. Giri kandara praye, similar to the dark caves in the mountains. Who here's ever been in a cave? Wow, a lot of people. Now, I was once in a copper mine that was so dark that if they turned off the lights, you could see nothing. It was pitch dark. Translation of Prabhupada Pashri. In this material world, when the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and does not care for Krishna consciousness, he simply engages in different types of mischievous and sinful activities. He's then subjected to the threefold miseries, and out of fear of the elephant of death, he falls into the darkness found in a mountain cave. So who here's ever seen a live elephant? Who's here ever seen a live elephant out of the zoo? Suppose there was a live elephant following you. A maddened elephant. There's elephants have a very unusual. Very unusual system for reproduction. For most animals, the female is in heat and the males go crazy after the female. So that happens with elephants. elephants, but elephants also have a very unusual thing where the male elephant occasionally becomes, what do they call it? Muth, I think. Where the male elephant becomes very, how would you say? Wild. He becomes very wild. And he starts, his forehead grows, and he starts giving this liquid starts coming from his forehead. And eating tame elephants, trained elephants, can't be handled during the time that they're in muth. And they go completely wild. And if they're wild elephants, then they just, that's the time that they want to mate. And normally only the big elephants get to reproduce. But even the very big elephants will get out of the way of a young male in muth because they're just completely nuts. They're totally fierce. So this is, if you had a male elephant in muth chasing you, in the forest. Even their handlers can't deal with them at that time. That's when they say maddened elephant. That's what they mean, an elephant. There's sometimes, right, the description says there in the Shastra, maddened elephant, and there's stuff oozing from his forehead, right? You read that? So if an elephant like that is chasing you, you need to get out of the way. So where does the living entity run when this elephant is chasing you? Into a what? Into a cave. Into a girikandara. So when the gaja bayat, when the ruchi gaja bayat, if you're being chased by an elephant in what will happen if you are in that elephant's way? Pretty certain what will happen. You're what? You'll be dead. Finished. Absolutely finished. No hope. Even if you raised that elephant from it when he was a baby and so forth and you thought he was your friend, still be research. So then one runs into a mountain, dark mountain cave. Is a dark cave scary?
Yeah.
Yeah. A dark cave. So the maddened elephant is scary and the dark cave is scary. Everyone is afraid of death. And however strong a materialistic person may be, when there is disease in old age, one must certainly accept death's notice. The conditioned soul becomes very morose to receive notice of death. His fear is compared to the fear experienced upon entering a dark mountain cave, and death is compared to a great elephant. So even if you enter in this cave, this crazy elephant is going to find you out anyway. And Prabhupada's talking here about old age and disease, one becomes particularly fearful, but this fear of death is not confined to old age and disease, is it? Who here read Andrew Junaswamy's Diary of the Preaching in Australia and the Floods? Who here read that? Anybody? Read that? One person only? Two? Three? That's it? Oh my. So he's preaching in Australia and the Floods, and they had left their stuff at the farm. Right? They were going by bus to do Harinam and distribute flyers. And meanwhile, the roads are flooding out. That's a very exciting story. But one thing is, while they're out on Harinam, they find out that the flood came into the devotee property and it flooded the houses that were at a lower level. And in one of those houses at a lower level, the men on the party had been staying. And of course, when you're staying someplace and you go out on Harinam, you leave all your things while you're staying, right? You don't bring your passport, you don't bring your cash, you don't bring your computer, you don't bring your iPod. So guess what happened to all of their things? Ruined. Ruined. So can we think for a minute of, I'd like us to think for a minute of something we have that we don't care about at all. Maybe it's some old clothing that we haven't worn, or, you know, something we have that if we lost it, we'd say, eh, so what? Can you think of something like that? Can you think of something like that? How do you feel about that thing? Are you very fearful about it? Okay. Now I'd like us to think about something where if we left it in our house and our house got flooded, that we'd be pretty upset. That we'd be fearful. What will I do? What will I do? And just hearing this story about these devotees with Indrajuna Swami, I immediately felt fearful. It happened to me. My stuff could get flooded too. I could lose all of my stuff.
stay on the high ground. I wonder if it could flood here. How low is my unit? Could it flood here? Right? Oh, we heard about this girl who was shot in her dumb, and we think, oh, I'll be really careful. I'll do this. Immediately we feel fearful, isn't it? We don't have to be old. Do we have to be old to feel fearful? Do we have to be sick to feel fearful? No. And ultimately, all of these fears that we're feeling, what is the thing that we most are afraid to lose?
Body.
Our body. And our mind. Isn't that scary? Yeah, that's really scary. I know, if somebody gets in an accident and they can't remember anything. We all know of people that has happened to, haven't we? My sister-in-law got up in the middle of the night a year ago. She got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. They were staying at some friend's house. And she went in the dark downstairs, and she opened what she thought was the bathroom door. And she stepped in what was the door to a cellar. She fell downstairs. And she said, oh, it's been a year now. She still has a lot of problems with her memory, besides a lot of physical problems. And her husband was telling me, he says, you know, 1 second can change everything. And we all know that, don't we? Can't this happen at any time? Anytime. Walking on the road, somebody can hit you with a car. So these are, and these fears, they're with us all the time, aren't they? Are we ever free from this fear? Ever, at any time? We're always afraid that everything I have, right, there's nice instructive stories for children, how these merchants are on a boat, and they're all taking their wares to a port to sell them, and they're all bragging about what they have, and then one person has nothing, and they said, oh, you're so foolish. He said, no, I'm a scholar. I carry my treasure in my head. And when they land, and there's a storm, and all of the goods are destroyed, and when they land, the merchants have nothing, but the scholar, he goes and becomes, starts a university. But even that we can lose, can't we? Our memory, our knowledge, isn't it? Our body. Robert's talking here about old age and death. So, yeah, I spent some time with my mother before she died. I was there, like 12, 13 hours a day, every day, for 3 weeks before she died. And she had a progressive disease for the last 15 years of her life, where gradually she lost the use of the muscles in her body. At the end, she couldn't swallow, so she wasn't able to eat. And she basically died from slow starvation. They wanted to put in a feeding tube, and she said, I'm 89, if I can't eat, it's time to go. But it was horrible. She couldn't use her body, just like a newborn baby that can't, she couldn't even turn over. What's it, about 3 months old, baby can turn over. She couldn't even turn over. Someone had to turn her. What to speak of, like using the toilet, she had to have diapers. And I remember one time after her aide was changing her diaper and cleaning her up, I looked at her and I said, this must be very humiliating, isn't it? She said, you can't even imagine. She couldn't talk, she mouthed it. She wasn't able to make any sounds. And she was a very, very capable person. She had run huge charity organizations, and very, very brilliant person. And although even to the end she kept her intelligence, she couldn't express anything. She couldn't make any sounds. She could just say, like, if she wanted water. And if it was something complicated, it would take, one time she wanted me to call my sister and wish my sister a happy anniversary, and it took me a half an hour to understand what she wanted. You know, I just couldn't understand. And I had to put a pen in her hand, and I had to hold her hand over the pen while she could barely write one squiggly letter at a time. So it was very frightening. You know, we're thinking, I hope that doesn't happen to me. I hope that doesn't happen to me. Maybe everything will be okay. It won't happen. But it could happen to me. And we know devotees that these things happen to, don't we? We know devotees who get cancer, who get brain cancer, who get accidents, and isn't it? Don't we? Right? And you're thinking, oh, that won't happen to me. Maybe they just weren't very serious. I'm going to manipulate my life so that nothing bad will happen. But ultimately, we're all going to die, and it might be today. I one time said that in the Gurukula, I should probably many times, but one time when I said that in the Gurukula, we had two new students, and very new to Krishna consciousness, and the mother called me up that evening and says, "Why are you telling my children that they're going to die?" I said, "Because they are." I said, "But you said they might die today." I said, "They might. You shouldn't tell them that." "Why not?" So how do the materialistic people deal with this problem?
They ignore it.
They pretty much they ignore it. I was just reading a thing from Vanaswami, our GBC chairman, and he was saying how he was recently in a bus going to Gangotri, up in the mountains where the Ganges starts. And he said the bus was after sunset. It was dark and he was dozing in the bus as the bus was going all the way to the left and all the way to the right and all the way to the left. Then the next day, when he left, it was the daytime. And he was on the same road going the other direction. And he saw that the road was a little narrowed on the edge of a mountain, way down, looking into a precipice, into a raging river. And he said, "Then I couldn't sleep." He said, "You know, ignorance, if you just don't know, then death is 1 centimeter away. I'm so comfortable on this bus." And when you see death, you become afraid. So the first thing that happens when we contact the Shastra, when we contact Guru, we contact Sadhus, when we come in touch with Krishna, is we first we see that there is this precipice there. We start becoming aware, don't we? We start becoming aware that I'm living in a constant state of fear. Materialistic people are not aware that they are in fear at every moment. And therefore, can one be happy? Is happiness possible in such a situation? Is it possible? No, it's impossible. Like, you know, here we are in this little tiny corner of the world. We're far removed from all the wars of the world, right? I don't think anyone here worries about terrorists. War. Could a war come here too? Is that possible? Suppose there was a war going on. And we're having this class, but we knew that it ended. Are some devotees in some places like this? I just saw a headline that a Maoist attack in Orissa and killed 15 people in Orissa. We think, "Oh, that's Orissa. That's India. I'm not there. I'm in Orissa." But just imagine if it was like that. You know, we had terrorists here. We're having our class. All the time we're having our class, we'd be fearful, wouldn't we? Oh, maybe they're going to barge in the door with guns. That happened in America, even when there wasn't any war. Many, many years ago, 73, I think, 72 or 73, that the daughter of one motorcycle gang member had said that she was going to join the Hare Krishna movement, which she didn't do, but that's what she said she was going to do. And her father was looking for her. He and his gang members went to New Vrindavan. They thought she was there. And the devotees were having, just like this, the devotees were having class. And all of a sudden, all these bikers come in the door with guns blazing and started to shoot. One of them went on the altar. The devotees quickly grabbed the small deities. One of them went on the altar, sat down on the altar and said, "I am God." And some of them took Kirtananda and Dhruva's father's name?
Dharmatma.
Took Kirtananda and Dharmatma up and said, "Dig your graves." Pointed guns at them and said, "Dig your graves." Was it just having class? There wasn't even a war going on. Nobody expected it. And while they're digging, one of these guys on the altar pushed over the deities. And the sound of Radharani falling frightened all of the bikers. It was the chief guys who were making Kirtananda and Dharmatma go over there. They got so frightened by the sound of Radharani hitting the altar that they immediately left. They ran away and they ran to the temple and said, "Come on, come on, come on." But they were just sitting. peacefully. So first thing is one becomes aware. When one starts to take up spiritual consciousness, one becomes aware that this is happening in every moment. We're threatened by this at every moment. The materialistic people are not aware. They deal with it by ignorance. So at first, in a sense, we may feel this fear more acutely than we felt it before coming to Krishna consciousness. We start becoming aware, I'm always fearful, therefore how can I be happy? You can't be happy if you think some terrorist is going to barge in your house and shoot you. Who can be happy in such a situation? People try. You know, even in war zones, there's weddings going on. You know? People are still getting married in Iraq and Afghanistan, places like that. Spending a lot of money even on weddings. Big festivals. So they're trying, but all the time they're in fear. So what is our solution that we have to consider? So what is the cause of this fear? What do we do because of this fear? And what is our solution? And then we're going to have we're going to actually practice the solution. Will that be fun? I hope it'll be fun. So what is the cause of our fear? Why are we afraid?
Attachment.
Attachment. Just like we did that little experiment with something you care about and something you don't care about. The thing you don't care about, you don't have any fear associated with that thing, right? No fear associated with it. Some old pair of shoes or something. But the thing you're attached to, and why are we attached to that thing? If you think about this thing, something you're attached to, or if you lost it, just even thinking about losing it is fearful. Why are we attached to it?
Security.
Yeah, I mean, the things I'm attached to, I'll tell you right now what I'm attached to my passport. I think without my passport, I could get kicked out of the country, you know, who knows what can happen. I'm attached to my computer. I'm attached to my little music box. I'm attached to my glasses. Yeah, certain things that I really don't want to lose. I'm really attached to my bead bag. There's certain things I always know where they are. Where's my bead bag? Where's my glasses? Where's my passport? If I think I may not even know where it is, I get nervous. Right? Do you all have things like that? Why? Yes, security. I'm thinking these things are going to protect me. They'll protect me. They'll take care of me. If I have these things, that make sure that I'll live. I'll be happy. I'll have food. I'll have warmth. I'll have friendship. Whatever. I'll have some. I'm attached to my computer because I figured that way I have some meaningful work I can do. So why do we think those things are our source of happiness or security?
They make us forget about our fear.
They make us forget about our fear. But our fear comes from our attachment to them. Yeah?
Ignorance.
We're thinking what? Then we're part of this world. You're thinking I'm part of this world. And I've used this analogy many times, but I think it's a Sadhguru's analogy, but I think it's a very, very good one. It's exactly like people playing computer games, and they get their stuff in the computer game. They get their money, their digital money, and their digital spells and their digital things. And they don't want to lose them. I assume everyone here has at least seen someone play a computer game. Is that true? Anyone here who doesn't know anything about these things? No? I've never played them, but I've watched people. And they get very, very fearful of losing what they have. I mean, they're really, really fearful about it. And they're really, they meditate on it. I've seen devotees get into it. They meditate on it 24 hours a day. You know, I've got to have this thing. So we're thinking that this is real. That this is real. This is me. That's the cause of our fear. We've forgotten that I'm the soul. Krishna explains this in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he says that the living entity, although the body's doing so many things, eating, breathing, sleeping, evacuating, he said the soul is really not doing anything. That's part of the consciousness in which one has to work as a sacrifice. We're not doing anything. We're not doing anything. What are we doing? Only. computer game, is in a computer game, many thousands of people can be experiencing a similar illusion at the same time. You can meet your friends at a place in the game, right? You all think you're in the same place. And it feels very real to the people that are in it. But this is not real. We're not these bodies. We're not these minds. We're not walking. We're not sitting. We're not eating. We're not collecting our things. This has nothing to do with us. So that's the source of our fear, that I'm thinking, that's me, that's me, that's me, that's me. Then what do we do because of this fear? What does this fear cause us to do? Certainly we forget Krishna, because we're so absorbed in trying to protect all these illusory things that we can't give our attention to Krishna, which is one of the reasons why the Shastra keeps encouraging us in renunciation. Because as long as you're trying to get the happiness and the illusion and the security and the illusion, you can't do both. You can't be going after the security and the illusion and looking for the real shelter in Krishna. It just doesn't work. You know, you can do it in a, like a demigod way. Krishna, please help me get this thing in illusion. But you can't really, as the Prabhupada's talking here, reestablish our relationship with Krishna. Right? When the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with Krishna. So this fear causes us to forget Krishna. What else does it cause us to do? What do we end up doing because we're fearful?
Working hard.
We work really, really hard, which is what Govinda Das says, right? See the akhaka. It's cold, it's hot, long hours. Kripana durjana, for nasty people. Ever had a really nasty boss? Has nasty bosses. And why do you work for them? Because this fear is driving us. If I don't work hard, I won't live. I won't be happy. I won't be able to protect my things. And we subject ourselves to horrible situations. People subject themselves to working in mines. I know a devotee who works for a cigarette company to make a lot of money. Oh, I use the money for preaching. So we're doing horrible activities. Working so hard. What else do we do because of our fear? We become more and more attached. It's like I'm thinking, oh, I gotta make sure I live someplace that can't flood. We use all of our intelligence, right, to try to protect more and more and more. What else can we do out of fear? Or we think if we've got some bad leader, they might hurt my security, I might lose things, let me criticize them, let me get rid of them. And our envy, it's kind of our fear. What else does our fear cause us to do? Even though we're supposed to be members of a spiritual organization, we may still sometimes lie and cheat. Happens. Does it happen? Yes. Just unfortunately, just the last day I heard about somebody lying and cheating. big somebody, another sad story. So all due to fear. Right? So what do you think? Who here would like to be finished with this? Anybody want to be finished with this? Or are we afraid to give up our fear? I'm afraid to give up my fear. What do I think my fear is doing for me? Protecting me. How ridiculous. I'm thinking, if I'm really frightened all the time, then I'll be protected, because then I'll be motivated to do all the things to protect myself. If I'm fearful, I'll be motivated to work hard. I'll be motivated to even lie and cheat when necessary. I'll be motivated to envy. I'll be motivated for competition. I'll be motivated to do my duty. You think if I wasn't fearful, what would happen if I wasn't fearful? What would that look like? Let's say, first of all, do you think Krishna would like to help us get rid of our fear? Does he want that? Does he want us to be fearful? Must be. That's another kind of fear. That's nuts. That's love. You wouldn't want your child to be like going around shaking in fear of you all the time, would you? God, I just read the most wonderful story from Pankaji Nagri in Mayapur. He said when they first installed Lord Nrsingha Dev, there was one devotee, Baba Siddhi, who every time he'd do some service for Nrsingha Dev, he'd be shaking in fear of Nrsingha Dev. And one time when he was putting the Lord to rest, he heard this huge noise. He jumped, looked, everything looked okay, closed the door. Goes to take rest. In the middle of the night, he slept on the upper bunk of a bed. In the middle of the night, he feels his bed shaking. And he thinks, I guess, the pujari under him is getting up to go to Mangalarti. But when he opens his eyes and looks, he sees that the Nrsingha Dev himself is sitting on his bed. And the Nrsingha Dev says, why are you so afraid? Stop being so afraid. And the Lord takes his two arms and presses on Baba Sindhi's shoulders. So it felt like the whole universe was pressing on his shoulders. And then Nrsingha Dev vanished. Jumped out of bed. He just started running back and forth on the corridor of the building. And the devotees would come to him, you're okay, good boy. You just mumble something. And finally he thought, I think I should go to the temple room. So he runs downstairs, he runs to the temple room, and the Nrsingha Dev's deity door was closed, and then he just offers obeisances in front of the deity door, and he's saying prayers, and finally feels a little calm. He starts walking back to his room, and he notices everybody's staring at him. He goes, why are they all staring at him? And he looks, and he notices he's only wearing his underwear. Pumpkin, you said that he has marks on his shoulders from the Nrsingha Dev person. Anyway, the point is, Krishna doesn't want us to be afraid. Krishna doesn't want us to be afraid. So if we really wanted to give up our fear, could we? Would Krishna take away our fear? So why do we still fear? If Krishna would like us not to be afraid, can he instantly take away our fear? Can he do that? So why does that not happen? Yeah, we're afraid to give up our fear. Make sense? Does that make sense to everybody? Are you with me? Or are you not sure? You with me? Let's say we had no fear. Let's say that we really said, Kiritari, I think I'm done with this now. I'm ready to give up fear. What would our life be like? What would happen?
You have to know who you are.
You have to know who you are. So say, in order to give up fear, I'd have to know that I'm not this body. I'd have to know my actual relationship. But if you give up fear, you won't know your relationship. What would life be like? What would we do differently if we had no fear?
It would be so worried about ourselves.
We wouldn't be worried about ourselves. What would we do? What would we be doing that's different from what we're doing now? Would we stop working hard? Would we just...
Because the picture is
imagination. Okay. So do we have to be worried that we'd be lazy bums if we weren't fearful?
No.
Okay. Was Prabhupada lazy?
No.
Was Hanuman lazy? Okay. Well, what would change a lot also if we gave up fear? How would our life be different? Yeah.
It'd be much easier to concentrate on the devotional activities.
Oh, okay. We could just concentrate. We wouldn't be distracted by all these things. Okay. What else would we do? Yeah.
We could be much more kind to other people.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because we wouldn't be worried about whether or not they were going to hurt us. We wouldn't be trying to protect ourselves from them and envying them. What else would we do that would be different?
So, up and down all the time, taking some stress when we lose something.
We wouldn't have this up and down of the unmistakable side of the bhakti, the enthusiasm and the sadness and the energy and the lethargy. We wouldn't be thrown around by the modes. It's fun being thrown around by the modes, right? We all like it? It's really awful. Okay? What else would be different if we weren't fearful? We have more time. We definitely would have more energy. How much of our energy is going into protecting ourselves through fear? A lot of our physical and mental energy is going into feeding this fear, keeping it going. It's our barbed wire, our electric fence, and we're feeding it electricity all the time. So a lot of our energy, a lot of our need for sleeping to replenish our energy, a lot of our need for food is going into feeding that fear. Yeah, we'd have a lot more time, a lot more energy. We'd have a lot less need for things in this world. What else would we do differently? Yeah, we'd be happier with the service that we're given. We wouldn't be worried, oh, I have to do this thing, because if I don't do this thing, I won't be happy. And so, yes?
We could do riskier things.
We could do riskier things. Yeah. What's a risky thing that we can do if we want to? No. Drive faster, and then I would have an accident, and then I would lose my intelligence, and I would be a quadriplegic. Why, if we gave up our fear, wouldn't we go around, you know, driving fast and taking heroin and all these other things? Why wouldn't we do that?
It would be sinless.
Hmm?
It would be sinless.
It would be sinless. Yeah.
You wouldn't be afraid of being right.
I wouldn't be afraid of being right. I wouldn't have to rush. Could I be more responsible if I was fearless? What would motivate me to be responsible if I was fearless? Serving Krishna. Right now, what's motivating me to be responsible? Fear. I better be responsible. Otherwise, I'll get in trouble. Otherwise, I'll have some sin. Otherwise, people won't like me. Otherwise, I'm not going to be. Are fearless devotees responsible? Usually, some of them are abhidhutas, but usually, very rare. Abhidhutas are very rare. We have to worry that we become an abhidhuta. That's not likely. Now, I don't think we'll just become like a crazy person if we're fearless, but that's what we're afraid of, isn't it? Afraid, well, if I was fearless, I'd start jumping, you know, doing bungee jumping off cliffs. No. Because real fearlessness isn't stupidity. How do you get real fearlessness? Seeing everything in connection with Krishna, seeing that I'm not this body. And in the latest Bhaktivedanta, the March April BTG, which probably most of you haven't gotten yet. So there's an article there, it has my name on it, but it's really Bhaktivedanta Swami's article, and I interviewed him and I wrote it up. And he talks about how he was threatened by the KGB for chanting Hare Krishna. You all know what the KGB is? Former Soviet police. and being threatened by the KGB is not a picnic. It's really not a picnic. And if you read the article, "Your Salt and Bread," what happened to people who were arrested by the KGB? It was a meaningful threat. And he was threatened. If you keep chanting Hare Krishna, and he was just dabbling in Krishna consciousness. You know, will arrest you or finish your life. And he didn't know what to do. So he went to talk to one of the devotees that he considered particularly intelligent. And he described her, he said she was 19, a very tiny person. So generally, we don't think of a tiny young woman as being courageous, do we? A tiny young woman is in need of protection. And here's this graduate student, and he goes and says, "What do I do? They're threatening me." And she said, "Oh, they can't hurt you. You're a soul." He said, as soon as he heard that, he felt complete peace. And he thought, wow, if this little tiny girl can be so courageous. So that's real freedom from fear. It's knowing I'm not inside. I don't have anything to do with this world. It doesn't matter. It's not me. You can say, okay, well, as long as I'm here. So, yeah, but how long are we here? Anyway, how long does this life last? How long does it last, folks? 8 billionths of a second. That's how long this life lasts. You may say, well, it doesn't feel like eternity. But people who almost die and they see all their life go before their eyes, they re-experience their whole life in a part of a second. And I'll tell you, they said, I relived my whole life. It wasn't just like some flash thing. How is that possible? Our whole life is like that. Just like that. So that's the platform of fearlessness. All right. How do we get that fearlessness? So that's what Govinda Das tells us. What did he tell us? How did he tell us to do it? He told us how to do it. What did he say? Abhay Charanaravindare. And he specifically said, worship the Lord's lotus feet. Shravanam Kirtanam. The 9 classes. And we should engage in that. He said also this life is flickering. It's like a drop of water on a lotus. What are all these things we're trying to protect? All these things we're trying to protect, our youth, we're trying to protect our home, our families. So this is all moving. Go. So now we're going to do some. Are you ready to practice this? This was all theory up till now. You ready for some practice? Everybody ready? Let me try. Okay. So there was this devotee of Lord Shiva. And one time he played the drums while Lord Shiva was dancing. And he played very expertly. Lord Shiva was very pleased with him. And he said, "What would you like? Wouldn't you be pleased if you were dancing and somebody was playing the danga very expertly? What would you like?" And Vanasura asked for? What did he ask for? 1,000 arms. Funny things that people ask for. Of course, I think it was Maharaj Prithu who asked for 1,000,000 years, but that was to hear devotional service, and he didn't mean that literally. It wasn't anyone who would cover with ears. So Vanasura got these 1,000 arms, and then he was anxious to fight with somebody. Now, when you have some opulence, you want to use it. Well, that was his inclination. So then this whole thing was arranged where his daughter Usha fell in love with Aniruddha, and we're not going to tell the whole story, and Aniruddha was brought there in the middle of the night, and so forth and so on. And then Vanasura finds out that his daughter's having an affair, but nowadays it's no big deal, I suppose, but in those days it was a real big deal. And he arrested Aniruddha. And the news came to the others that Vanasura had arrested Aniruddha. So Krishna and all of his, Krishna and Balaram and all of his armies go to Sanatapur, the capital city of Vanasura. But because Lord Shiva was worshipped by Vanasura, he came to protect Vanasura. So there was Lord Shiva, Kartikeya, right, Ganapati, and all of his ghosts and hobgoblins. And they're having this big cosmic battle. And all the other devas are in the sky watching. And Shiva and Krishna were fighting. And Lord Shiva releases a hurricane weapon. And Krishna puts up a mountain. And Lord Shiva puts up water weapon. And Krishna... No, God, Lord Shiva puts fire. And Krishna puts up water weapon. And then Lord Shiva gets out his main weapon, his Pasupika Shastra. And Krishna counteracts it with the Narayana Shastra. Oh, they also threw Brahmastras at each other. And then Lord Shiva was exasperated. He didn't want to have any more weapons. He looks, quivers empty. I've used all of my weapons. And that time, what did Krishna throw at him?
Yawning.
There we get like that. You know, you just can't do anything anymore. Right? You're doing something. Maybe you're doing something you really want to do. And you just can't think anymore. So Lord Shiva couldn't fight anymore. He was just useless. And he left the battlefield. Right? And then Brahmasura's getting enthusiastic. He started to fight with Krishna. And he's wielding all these arrows. And what is Krishna doing? He's just cutting all the bow strings and just breaking all the bows. And he cut Bhanasura's chariot to pieces, and the horses were laying on the ground, and Bhanasura was in a lot of trouble. And then what happened?
She
didn't. Not yet.
There
was this demigoddess named Kotara who came. She came naked. High class people don't want to see naked women. And Bhanasura was able to leave the battlefield to try to recoup. So, then Lord Shiva thinks, okay, I've got to take care of my devotee here. So what does Lord Shiva bring out? His Shivajwara. His Shivajwara is 12 times as hot as the sun. He's got three heads. And he's walking. The old recordings from the BBT. I'm sure you heard that your kid, right? Shivajwara is walking. He's shaking the earth with every step. You know, it's big. Do you think that'd be scary, Gopro? He was really scary. 12 times as hot as the sun. I bet you don't know how to multiply by 12. Nice lessons from Google. How do 12 times as hot as the sun? What's the temperature? And then Lord Krishna releases his mind, which was very... And it's interesting that Prabhupada says you can tolerate extreme heat but not extreme cold. Of course, if you're in New Zealand, there's probably extreme heat, would be no problem. It just has to be like 25 degrees, and you guys come up to me and say, how are you dealing with heat? That's quite funny. So this very, very cold Rayanishwara. The Shivajwara was becoming diminished in his power. And he starts calling. Right? You know, Brahma Kori's, help! Right? Remember? He's calling to Lord Shiva, help me! Help me! Lord Shiva does nothing. He can't do anything. So then he figures, well, I guess I gotta ask for help from my enemy. So he goes to Krishna. Please help me. He starts saying these wonderful prayers to Krishna. Very, very nice prayers. The etiquette is first you glorify and then you ask for a benediction. So please glorify Krishna. And then finally he says, I'm very much distressed by your Narayana. And Krishna says, all right, remove him and you'll no longer be distressed. And he says, and anyone who remembers this fight between the Shivajwara and the Narayana, what does he say? What's the benediction?
Yeah.
We'll become fearless. We'll never be defeated, and we'll become fearless. And he also grants fearlessness to the Shiva Jwara. So this is a very, very nice way to become fearless. I had a situation a few years ago where I was dealing with some tax problem, and they were really harassing us. We were going to these hearings, and they defeated us. And then I thought, oh, I should meditate on this pastime. So I started meditating on this pastime in the morning when we were victorious. meditate on how even if the material energy is throwing at you 12 times the blazing fire of the sun, that you can get cool relief from the Nirvana Jhara and be relieved of all fearfulness.
Oh, and then we have here an elephant. What was this verse about again?
I can't remember. What was it about? I'm boring some of you to death. I'm sorry. If you're tired, you can understand it. What was this verse about again?
Being
chased by a wild elephant and running into a cave. A cave. Did Krishna ever run into a cave? Did he ever run into a cave when he was being chased by somebody?
Yeah,
he did. That's also a really interesting story. This is the cure for fear, isn't it? Yes, that's what Govinda Das tells us. Alright, so we know Jarasandha was a really nasty guy. He's Kamsa's father-in-law. Not a very nice person. So he was attacking Mathura 17 times. He was about to attack for the 17th time. And then there was this person, Kalyamana. Now the story of Kalyamana is really interesting. I gotta go back and read the commentaries on this. This is what it says in the Krishna book. It says that Gargamuni, who was the priest of the Yadu dynasty, was one time laughed at by some of the Yadus. They were laughing at him. He became angry and he thought, I want to get those Yadus. And so he did some austerity to get the benediction of having a son who was dangerous to the Yadus. And it said that he had the son with the wife of a Yadu king. So that sounds strange. Anyway, and his son, Kalyamana, was informed by Narada Muni that you should attack the Yadus, that they are the right persons for you to attack in order to make good the desire of Ravana. So this Kalyavana was a very low-class person, and he decided, well, the best time to attack is when Jarasandha is also attacking. Is that intelligent? Yeah, it's very intelligent. You all know how Hitler was defeated? How was he defeated?
He was attacking Russia.
And?
And he was attacking on two fronts.
Yes, on two fronts. And Hitler had written in his Mein Kampf, you never fight a war on two battlefields at once. How did he get stuck in that position, by the way? What mistake did he make? Well, he underestimated the British for sure. He thought he could defeat them.
He underestimated Russia.
He underestimated Russia, mostly. He underestimated Russia. He thought he would take over Russia the way he took over France. Excuse me, any of you people were never French. And then most of the little countries in Europe, they just capitulated. They didn't feel like having their cities bombed. You know, so like Denmark and the Netherlands, they just said, fine, you know, come take us over, no problem. We don't see any reason to fight you, be defeated, and then have you take us over. So he thought it'd be like that. He thought, you know, another blitzkrieg like Poland and France, and he was stuck in Russia. And he was really stuck. He didn't send his soldiers winter gear. Anyway, long story. So he's stuck fighting in Russia, and he's such an idiot that he wouldn't withdraw. This is the problem with materialistic people. You know, they're losing and they still keep fighting. They'll never admit defeat. So he was fighting there. And then, of course, the Japanese very kindly helped out the situation by bombing America, which had remained at least technically neutral. So now you had the Americans and the Canadians, and probably you guys were there too, right? Probably the Australians and New Zealanders were there. So you had the British and the Americans and Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, and a few French, and they were all fighting. And there was the D-Day, etc. And the Germans were bound in on two sides. So Krishna didn't want the situation to be there for his devotees in Mathura. He said, you know, if Jarasandha is on one side and Kalyavana is on the other side, then how will we, what will we do? He said, Balaram and I will be busy fighting Jarasandha, and then this Kalyavana will take over Mathura. So he did a really interesting thing, which ordinary warriors can't do. He instantly had a city built in the middle of the ocean, transferred all of his family and everybody to Dwarka, right? While he was doing that, Kalyavana had taken over the city of Mathura without a fight. But he really wanted to fight with Krishna. So Kalyavana is a demon, and he sees Krishna leaving the city. And Narada had told him what Krishna looked like. So he sees this very beautiful. Sometimes we think, if I just see Krishna, then I will surrender. But Kalyavana saw Krishna. He says, it's this very beautiful person. And he can see the Srivats mark on Krishna's chest. He saw his glittering yellow garments, and he was just walking. And Krishna, does Krishna have any fear? No. Jarasandha's army is coming. Kaliyaman is there with his army, and Krishna's just walking. Just walking. Doesn't even have a weapon. Doesn't have a chair. Just going for a stroll. And Kaliyaman is. And he starts running after Krishna, who's just walking. And although Kaliyama is running, he can't catch Krishna, who's just walking. And then Krishna walks into a very dark cave. But Krishna's not going in this cave out of fearfulness. Right? He's going in this cave out of fun. So he goes to this cave. You can just imagine he's kind of against the wall. And there's this Muchakunda lying in the cave. And Kaliyaman comes in, he doesn't see Krishna. But he sees there's someone lying there. There must have been enough light. He could see there was someone lying there. He thought, it's coward. He's come in this cave. We might have came out of cowardice, right? From a mad elephant. But Krishna wasn't there out of cowardice. And Kaliyaman kicked Muchakunda, who then burns with ashes. So it's also a very nice story about Krishna with an elephant. Right? What's the story of Krishna with an elephant? So Kamsa invited Krishna to Mathura for a wrestling match to try to kill him. And when Krishna goes to enter the wrestling arena, there's this huge elephant blocking his way, and the elephant keeper is piercing the elephant, trying to make him more and more angry. And Krishna says, please get out of my way. And they go, nothing to him, and I can't get out of your way. So Krishna runs to the back of the elephant, and then can't see him anymore. Elephant tries to find him. Krishna runs to the front. The elephant tries to get him. Krishna can't run to the back. And Krishna takes the elephant's tail and pulls him about 6 or 7 meters, drags him on the ground, and then shakes him back and forth like he used to do with a calf when he was a little boy. Right? The elephant's trying to get him. And then Krishna runs to the front, slaps him. The elephant tries to get him. Krishna runs to the back. And Krishna lies down on the ground, and the elephant trips. How many trips? He's thinking Krishna's still on the ground, and Krishna got up really fast. The elephant turns around, takes his tusk, puts it in the ground where he thinks Krishna is. Yeah, Krishna's not there anymore. Krishna runs to the front, takes the elephant's trunk, pulls the elephant down, jumps up on the elephant's back, hits the elephant on the back, and kills the elephant. And he takes out one of the tusks of the elephant, and by that time he's covered with dirt and perspiration. Krishna's perspiration is like pearl. And he's also splattered with the elephant's blood, and it says he's feeling very blissful. Do you feel happy when you've conquered some big challenge in life? You defeated somebody who was in your way, you feel happy? Yeah, of course. So Krishna's feeling very blissful. Covered with dust and sweat and elephant blood. And he took his tusk. So when we're absorbed like that, Shravana Kirtanam Swarnamandam Upadasayana Dasmay Pujana Saki Jana Atmanayana, and then Abhaya Jananadam Abhaya, we become fearless. That is our cure for this fearfulness. Alright? Is that okay? Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Today is Ekadasi. Very nice Ekadasi. And today we fast half day for the appearance of Varaha. Varaha's appearance day is tomorrow. But you have to break fast after Ekadasi. So you can't fast if you have to break fast. Does that make sense? Do you understand that? Part of observing a vow is finishing it. So part of observing the Ekadasi vow is you have to finish the vow, and therefore you can't fast when you're breaking fast. So, therefore, we fast half day today for Lord.